Well, good morning, friends. A wonderful privilege to be here. And just as we begin, can I just once again celebrate my love and affection for your church community and the privileges that we share together. I always think when I come and worship with you how much I enjoy your community. If they didn't pay me to be a Baptist, I'd seriously consider. Our communities have distinctives, but underneath there is a binding heart in our love for Jesus, and it makes us strong. And our world needs to see that and needs to see it more profoundly, the connection. I just want to acknowledge and honor your pastor, Peter, who we delight in his ministry in our city. We delight in what he brings to this city and how God uses him, and pray for him that God would continue to work through him to touch your denominational family in significant ways. It's great to share the connections, and God keeps multiplying those connections. Ginny and Peter's daughter and Janet and my daughter met randomly in the UK recently and caught up and shared a little time together. So just all the wonderful connections that God brings out of our journey. Well, this morning I'd like to challenge you with the risks and rewards of Advent. The risks and rewards are much, much, much higher than most church people ever realize. The risk of missing it and the rewards of receiving it are much, much higher than we imagine. And because this is true, a group of people like ourselves would do well to be confronted by John chapter 1, verses 9 to 14, and to think anew about what we're doing as we approach Christmas and what God is doing as he approaches us in Jesus Christ. The risks are very, very high that you will miss it. Isn't that shocking? Doesn't that make you nervous? I'm a minister of the gospel, and if I've read all of this correctly, I'm at higher risk than you are. Because it's the insiders who miss it, and it's shepherds and astrologers and Egyptians who welcome him. We'll come back to that lot. And the rewards, they are so enormously high. Sometimes we've kind of dulled it down in various and sundry ways. We have to ask ourselves, why would those shepherds rejoice like that and those magi make such a long distance? And those Egyptians respond as they did, why? You're scratching your heads about the Egyptians, aren't you? Yeah. This sense of Advent, the coming of Jesus Christ, the glory of God, has high risk and high reward. And this morning, it is my passion that I, together with you, would set myself up, set you up to receive it, recognize it, because that's where the rewards are. People ever ask you, what is Christmas about? What was going on at Christmas? There's a one-sentence answer here in verse 9. The light, true light, that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. That's what was going on at Christmas. The rewards are so high. What is Christmas about? It's about light, truth, grace, God's glory, all themes of these few verses, coming into our world to touch every person. Wouldn't it be great if some light came into politics just about now? That's the Advent message. I mean, that's overwhelming, isn't it? Wouldn't it be fantastic if some light came into the business sector, the education sector, the health sector? Wouldn't it be wonderful if some light, pure light, came into your most compelling problem and challenge right now in your journey? Grace, truth, godly glory came right into the midst of your mess and impacted and affected and engaged. That's Advent. That's Christmas. That's the promise of God among us. Emmanuel, God with us. Jesus, God saves. These amazing claims. You see, the rewards are so much higher than we are inclined to imagine. That God's light would enter our spheres and change everything. And the risks are high because we are a people who have received so much and we just might miss it. So in the Christmas story that you will reflect on over these coming weeks in many and varied ways, the richest of stories, isn't it? With so many amazing, wonderful, stirring, compelling themes. There's three groups of people who actually get it, and they are set there in the story to confront us. They're shepherds. Shepherds were the low class. These were the folks who had a career serving at McDonald's, nothing else. Right? These are the folks who, and I don't mean management, I mean sort of just frontline counter. These were the folks who were not easily employed. And they knew it. They tended sheep. They did the work that kept the economy going, pretty much unnoticed, pretty much unnamed, pretty much unheralded. And they're the ones who noticed the choir. They're the ones who responded to the invitation, and they're the ones who came because they're able to hear. And then there's the Magi, the astrologers who read the signs in the sky. They're outsiders. They're folks who don't have the Torah and the temple and the rabbi. What do they have? They have tea leaves. They have star charts. And in the midst of all that, God said, "Here I am. Come and find me." And they dropped everything and went seeking him. Do you know who finds God? Those who seek him. Those who seek him. Not those who know where he is. Not those who have it sorted. Not those who have all the answers and everything is pat and ready to go and I'll just open the box, unwind Christmas the way we do every year, and it will be glorious. Well, it might be wonderful, it might be good, but if you want to find God, you have to seek him. You have to go looking. And then there's the Egyptians, those delightful Egyptians. When you think of the Egyptians and the biblical narrative, it's very likely that you think of the slave trade that was going on in the Hebrew birth story when the Hebrews were coming into their own. God called them out of Egypt. He called them out of slavery. He called them out of bondage. I had a small group one time that had an eclectic mix. There were Egyptians in the group. And I asked them, "Does it annoy you that as a preacher I'm always banging on about the Egyptians?" And he said to me, "No, because you have missed the rest of the story." He said, "The Egyptians were the ones who welcomed Jesus. When Herod was killing the infants, the Egyptians welcomed him as a refugee. The Egyptians opened their arms to the Messiah and gave him a..." I've never noticed so clearly that fact. Joseph took Jesus into Egypt and they found a home when they couldn't find but a manger in Bethlehem. The outsiders turn up in the Christmas story so ready to receive. And what do they receive? They go away dancing, they go away worshiping, they go away praising, they go away with grace and truth. They have seen the glory of God, and it is wonderful. Now, you and I are church folk, and we are at risk. And we've got to figure out a way to position ourselves so that we can hear the gospel and the Christmas story as if we've never heard it before. We have to figure out a way to position our lives so that we can be surprised by the wonder and the grace and the goodness of our God. Because God is always doing a new thing, and he wants to do some good things in our lives. But we're at risk. we're at risk. And the profound challenge, I don't want to depress you, it'll get better as we go, is that if you have lived many Christmases with Jesus in your heart, you are at higher risk than you know of missing what God wants to do. We have a thing inbuilt, our human nature, called inattentional blindness. And a fellow in Harvard wrote a paper in 1999 that came out of an experiment which he did called Sustained Inattentional Blindness in Dynamic Situations. Sounds like a Harvard paper, doesn't it? That was the subtitle. The main title was Gorillas Among Us. Gorillas Among Us. He did this astonishing experiment. He recruited six university students. He dressed three of them with black t-shirts. He dressed three of them with white t-shirts and gave each team a basketball. And he had them move about a very, you know, sort of small space, just sort of choreographed, tossing the ball to another member of their team. And you had to watch this video, and you had to count the number of times that the white team exchanged the ball. So ignore the black team, watch the white team, count the number of times that they exchanged the ball. And he got university students to sit down and watch this video, and he recorded their responses. And astonishingly, very few could actually get the number of passes right. They would count, but they couldn't actually get it exactly right. But what was really astonishing was that more than 50% of the people who did the little test missed the gorilla that walked right through the middle of the experiment as everything was happening. And you think, that's ridiculous. Go online, you can look at the video. Gorilla experiment. How many of you have seen that experiment? Yeah, it's a fascinating little... So this is a Harvard research project. How is it possible that we are that blind? It has to do with what we are paying attention to. And as soon as we start paying attention to something with like really undivided, I gotta count, I gotta watch, I gotta pay attention, we miss all kinds of stuff. That's what was going on in Israel. They were so focused on the temple, so focused on the rabbis, so focused on their tradition, on their Torah, on their ritual, on their inheritance that they missed him. He came in flesh, and they weren't expecting that. The word flesh that's used there in the Greek is sort of a crude word. It's neutral in English, but in that context that it's used in Greek, it's just a little bit less than neutral. It's like, really? Really? God, what did you say? God came in flesh? And they weren't expecting that. They were expecting him to come in the systems and ways that were understandable. But God and his glory marched right through their midst, a gorilla through the experiment. And they didn't even see it. They repeated this experiment about a decade later. And so many people have heard about the gorilla experiment, like us in the room, that what they did this time was they set up exactly the same experiment, said, see the gorilla, you know, and then when you get to the end, they test your skills. And oh, good on you, you can count now. Oh, you saw the gorilla, fantastic. Did you notice the person leaving the scene? Oh, didn't even notice that. And then the real kicker, did you notice the curtains behind changing color from gold to red? And I didn't even see it. I didn't even see it. Blind. Why? Because I was looking for a gorilla. That's our problem. That is our profound and deeply challenging problem. Once we've figured God out, we're at risk. We're at risk of not seeing the new and wonderful and exciting and profound thing that he's going to do right there in front of us, in our family, in our community, in our government, in our neighborhood, in business, in education, in all the spheres of life. God has not forgotten us. God's kingdom is not distant past or so far future that it makes no difference today. God is with us, Emmanuel. God saves Jesus. God comes. Advent. So watch for it. Let me tell you a little experience that we had while we were on leave. We had been praying, asking God for rest and for gifts. Just anything God wanted to give to us. And so he gave us the gift of suffering. Now, I know. Not our suffering, strangely, but stepping into other people's suffering and being willing to embrace and share it. We found ourselves in an extraordinary number of situations where we were invited to lean into other people's suffering. So, I'm a pastor, and I do that all the time. And I wasn't just sure at the beginning of our holiday if I was liking what was happening, leaning into other people's suffering. I know, I'm shocking you saying that. But you know, you want a bit of a break, can I just get off the treadmill here? But it was in this space that God blessed Janet and I most profoundly. Let me back it up. I did a conference right at the end of my period before I stepped into leave. So over in Perth, spoke to a group of beautiful people. At the end of that conference, the leader of the conference said, I'd like to pray for you and Janet. And so this person prayed over us. And then they said, while I was praying, I think God gave me a word of encouragement, gave me an image, gave me a prophetic word to speak over the two of you. Is it all right if I speak that out? Well, it's a public setting. You've already brought it up. What can I say? Absolutely. Absolutely share it. And things like that, I always embrace with a sense of openness and expectation. And God, what do you want to say? So this person said, as I was praying, I had a mental image of you and Janet walking down a roadway. It's like a cobblestone road. And people were coming out of side alleys. And as they would come out, you'd just stop and you'd talk with them and you'd pray over them. And then you'd just keep on going. And in my image, the two of you were hand in hand walking down this path. And then she said, I'm sorry it wasn't a nice, smooth, paved road, but it looked like a rough cobblestone road. I don't know what that means. And I'm thinking, yeah, just stop talking, would you? Do you ever feel that? I just listened and let it all sink in. And we just filed it away. When someone comes to you and says, I think God might have given me something to give to you, just take it and hold it and wait on God and see how he might use it. Don't be overly anxious, just let it sit there. So we headed into long service leave. And we were maybe 3 weeks in when Janet was the one who pointed it out first. She said, Alan, have you noticed how many times we have found ourselves leaning into other people's suffering? And then we started to chat. Do you think this has something to do with what was shared to us? We go to a church service. It happened repeatedly. And we just sit down randomly. And as we're worshiping, the person next to us is in tears. And so I ask, you know, what can you do? And out comes a story. And I had nothing, you see. I'm not their pastor. I'm not staying in town. I have no fixes. I'm not medical, I'm not educational, I'm not business, I'm just a God person. So I would pray. I would listen and pray, and again and again and again, the light, the true light that lights up every person, seemed to come into the world. There was one situation where we just went to buy a pizza. That's all I wanted was a pizza. There was a drunk fella there. He was ramping up. And his language and thumping and like it was just escalating. And I saw the staff in the pizza place retreat to the kitchen. And a couple came in and turned around and went out. And I thought, oh, this is great. So I did what I don't usually do. Usually I kind of fade back. I'm not a confronter. But I thought, well, I just went over and I put my hand on his shoulder. And I said, what's wrong, mate? I studied many years to learn those words. That's all I got to say. When I touched him, he melted. He just melted. And he started to weep. And he told us that his father was in the hospital and that he was beside himself. And he'd gone out and got himself drunk, and now he was sitting here making an absolute fool of himself, and he didn't know what to do, and he didn't, and nobody would help him, and blah, 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 blah. And I said, nothing. until finally he stood up, ready to leave. I said, are you going to be okay, mate? Do you need any help? And he said, no, I'm much better now. I'm much better, he said. And the light that lights every person was coming into the world. It was the strangest thing. So Janet and I prayed for him. We prayed for his safety as he staggered. We prayed for his salvation and hope. And it was a beautiful moment. Such moments repeated through our time on leave, each time we leaned into someone else's suffering, exactly what we weren't planning to do on long service leave. Each time we leaned in. Sat down at church one Sunday and there was a woman there and I just fell into conversation and her story about the politics and challenge at work exploded. And so we prayed. We prayed. And I followed up and asked, you know, later, you know, how it went, because I had a friend who had a friend and a connection, and some good things happened in work that week. It's astonishing. I thought I was going on long service leave. I wasn't looking to be a minister. I thought I was going to take a break. It's when God was most at work. It's when I was more like a shepherd and more like an astrologer and more like an Egyptian, making space for God in ways that I had not expected. Janet and I actually organized, so we were in Italy. Italy's beautiful. And we spent several weeks there, and we organized some time in Tuscany, and we stayed at a villa for 1 week. And the arrangement was everybody comes in on Saturday, and you all stay there together, and then we jaunt off to some of those beautiful Italian villages. They have a welcome dinner, and we sat down at the welcome dinner, and we're all sort of in rows, and this beautiful food cooked by Mama. And wonderful conversation begins to emerge. For some strange reason, more than half the people in this place are Canadian. So we're feeling at home in Italy. And as the conversations begin to roll, the fellow across the table says, and what do you do? And I said, I'm a minister. And he said, all the pain of his life poured out. He was divorced, and the church had been very, very unkind to him, and some Christians had been very, very mean to him, and he was still holding on to his faith and holding on to a new partner, but he was full of hurt and stuff and looking to find a way forward. And I thought to myself, did I say pastor? I meant accountant. Because we were in pain again. You know, God shows up in the mess. God shows up in the mess again and again and again. That's where to look for him, in the mess, in your mess, in other people's mess. God comes in profound ways and takes on flesh and stands right in the middle of everything that is broken and wrong and messed up. That conversation that night was so much on his side, and I was being so kind of just in my, well, you can hear my attitude. And when we pushed back from the table, I realized that I hadn't really had much space to say much that was helpful. And it felt like it was unfinished. So I went to our room and I prayed that night as I was laying in bed and going to sleep, God, give me another opportunity to say something useful, to offer prayer, to, I don't know, to do something, because that man's in pain, and I feel like our story is only partly done. Well, nothing happened the next day. They went off and did some touring, and we went off and did some touring, or the next day, or the next day, or the next day, or that whole week, until finally we left that place and went on to the next city, to the next part of our holiday, and it drifted from my memory. And I thought, well, that's that. Until randomly, in another city, 2 weeks later, I hear a voice calling my name. I think, I don't know anybody in Italy. Who's, is that you, Lord? And it turns out it was. It was my friend who was sitting across the table from us, together with his partner, who'd happened to visit this little town that we were visiting for about 2 hours, on this particular day, at this particular time. And they came out of this path and connected with us, And we said, well, how random is this? Do you have time for lunch? He said, yes, we got time for lunch. And we sat down now, just the two of us, sorry, four of us, with enough time to talk. And I was able to just listen now and offer encouragement and pray. And we had a wonderful pastoral moment in that journey. We had a wonderful, it was like the true light that lights every person was coming into the world. And it was wonderful. He even paid the bill. And the meal finished, and Janet and I stepped away and went to get back on the boat that we had ridden to come into this little village, just shaking our heads, thinking, how amazing is that? It wasn't until the next day that we realized we were in Italy. We were on cobblestone paths. We were holding hands at the time. And this fellow came out of a side street, and we ministered to him. Well, that gives me goosebumps just to retell it. This amazing God whom we serve, the rewards of walking with him and seeking with him are higher than anything we could imagine. And he is at work in our world and wants to be at work in our world. By the time our long service leave ended and we returned to New Hope, God had given us the two things we asked for: deep and profound rest. Because through all those experiences of leaning into the suffering of others, it did not deplete us. This was the beautiful thing. It did not suck energy out of my soul. Because suddenly I was not sitting as the professional. I wasn't the rabbi. I wasn't the temple goer. I was the shepherd. I was the magi. I was the mysterious, the guy that was just there. And all I had to offer was Jesus, prayer, encouragement, attention, affection, interest. And then we were moving on to the next thing. And in the strangest way, God gave us rest and an amazing gift that I want to keep living into and learning about and growing in. That God meets us in amazing ways when we lean into other people's messes. When we lean into the brokenness of our world, when we look for him where we might least expect him. Now, don't get me wrong. He does come to church. Absolutely. And when we sing the songs, it's beautiful. And when we say the prayers, it's wonderful. And when we pass the peace, it's exceptional. God is here. God is here. But you will encounter him in ways that will blow your mind when you lean into the mess of those around you. When you take hold of Jesus' challenge to follow him on mission and to be about his work in the world. So if you and I are people who are at high risk in this season, what then can we do? In fact, we are at high risk. Let me just, one little illustration just as I land. They did the gorilla experiment again with some medical people in the Boston Women's Hospital. And they showed them a CT scan. And in fact, they showed them a number of CT scans, a stack, 239, five different patients. Four of the patients were absolutely clean, but one of the patients had an anomaly on their scans. And so these trained individuals were asked to go through the scans and to make sure that all these patients were good. Now, we just put an image up on the screen to show you the scans. This is one of the anomaly scans. And so I want you to, when you see the anomaly, would you raise your hand? When you see the anomaly, just raise your hand. Yeah, good, a few of you. The medical people should be really, you know, good at this because, you know, you're reading the... So this person has a problem with their lungs. Let me just look at the next slide. So there's a gorilla there. What? Like, unbelievable. Now, here's the thing. 83% of the professionals missed it. Because they're wired to look for something very different. It's not often you see a gorilla in a lung scan. Not often you see the glory of God in a mess that this world knows how to make. Not often that you see the God of heaven and earth taking flesh in the brokenness of our creation. And that's the Christmas story. We can disappear that silly image. But take it with you. We're at much greater risk than we know. God's doing things right there. And while shepherds and magi and Egyptians might even begin to see it, we might miss it. So what can we do? Well, we can seek God. Seek him. The scriptures say, seek him and he will be found. Seek him. This Christmas, don't just do the normal thing. Don't just say to yourself, I love that song. When are we going to sing that song? Don't say to yourself, we need to do this tradition or it doesn't feel like Christmas. Don't allow yourself to get lost in the comforts. Do all that, but don't stay there. Seek him. Do something different. Go someplace different. Open up something different. Read something different. Talk to someone different. Lean into someone's mess. Seek him. What can we do? Well, second, we can talk about him. Talk about him when we come to church. Talk about him in our family. Talk about him when you set up the nativity scene in the hallway. Because when we talk about him, it brings something into the open. It awakens something. What can we do? We can seek him and talk about him and empty ourselves. We can empty ourselves. There's a reason the scriptures say, come to God like a little child. Kids see the gorilla much faster than adults do. There's a reason why we are invited to be little children. We need to empty ourselves. We need to come to God this Christmas and say, I know so much, but oh God, help me to be like someone who doesn't know anything so I can see it again, feel it again, know it again, discover it again, and experience the true light that comes into the world to light every person. The grace and truth, the glory of the only begotten Son right there in front of me. God, let me see it. A fourth thing we can do is travel well together. Travel well together. I've often reflected on this passion thing. How could you miss God coming into the room? Like if Malcolm Turnbull came to church this morning, we'd know, yeah? If Beyonce turned up, we'd know. Now, not because all of us would recognize, but somebody would, and then we'd all know. So we need to travel together. We need to be in this together and listening to each other because somebody at St. Alf's this year is going to meet God like they've never met him before. And that's for all of us, not just for that person. That's for all of us to share, to lean in and hear that story and have our faith broadened and have our sense of the mission journey expanded and enlivened. And lastly, just to acknowledge our situation. So seek him, talk about him, empty ourselves, travel together, and acknowledge our situation. Just acknowledge it. We're at risk. We have the truth, but we are at risk. We might miss a gorilla on a CT scan because we know so much. Just acknowledge it and let God work in that amazing space. Because although the risks are so high, the rewards are absolutely incredible. Do you know what happens when you recognize him and receive him? You become a child of God. You are gathered into the divine family. You are embraced into heavenly places. You are given forgiveness and salvation and hope. Oh, we've seen him. We've seen his glory. And we have responded. Let us never lose sight. Let us see it again this Christmas so we can talk about it with wonder and with fervor and with passion. What's going on at Christmas? The true light that gives light to every person. All of politics, all of business, all of education, every family, every mess that exists on the planet, the true light is coming into the world. Watch for it. Amen. Father, we pray that you would guide our hearts into understanding, open our eyes and spirits that we might recognize, and open our lives that we might receive. For we would be your faithful children. We would be your serving children. We would be those with a testimony to declare, we have seen his glory. Hallelujah. Amen.